member, Sammy Rangel, the life technician and executive director of Life After Hate, Steve Brown, a retired professor of educational leadership, and former Kenosha Unified School superintendent, Joe Manji. Now here's today's Education Matters moderator.
Hello, I'm Karen Sconzert, and this is Education Matters. Once again, I get to do one of the things I like best about being a host of Education Matters and learn about a community institution that I didn't know anything about before. Today, we're hearing about the YWCA of Southeast Wisconsin and a special program they run to improve life for the community. And here to tell us more about it are Jake Gerges and Marie Hargroves. That right? So Jake is the YWCA Southeast Wisconsin's adult education director. He went to the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee and earned a bachelor's degree in educational studies with a focus on adult education. During his nearly two-decade career in nonprofit management, Jake has overseen and created programs that have helped roughly 2,000 adults obtain a credential, including ABE, GED, and high school equivalency diploma programming. Jake is committed to promoting racial and gender equity in all aspects of his personal and professional life, and he believes one way to promote a more equitable world is through adult basic education and helping adults achieve high school level credentialing, a base plate for further opportunity. Thank you for joining us, Jake.
Thanks for having me.
Yes. And Marie Hargrove currently serves as Educational Outreach Coordinator for the YWCA Southeast Wisconsin 5.09 HSED program. And we're going to define that in a bit. Marie's educational background includes a Bachelor of Arts degree in Community Leadership and Development from Alverno College and a Master's degree in Business from Cardinal Stritch University. Marie has served as a foster parent licensor and recruitment and retention specialist for Racine County Foster Care. Prior to that, she was employed by the United Way of Racine County for over 15 years and served in many roles during her tenure. Her volunteer experience includes serving as a board member for Big Sisters of Greater Racine and is a member of the Professional Women's Network for Service. She also volunteers in many community projects through her church as time allows. Hi, Marie. Thanks for joining us.
Hello. Thank you for having me, Karen.
So I'm very excited about this program because, once again, it's something I didn't know anything about. And I have to give a hat tip to Jessica Safransky-Schott, who is one of the Racine County United Way administrators, and she gave me this tip. So thank you, Jessica. So first thing first, please tell our listeners, and it could be either or both of you, about the YWCA of Southeast Wisconsin. Where is it? How long has it been around? What is the mission? And what are your roles at YWCA?
Yeah. The YWCA Southeast Wisconsin is a 128-year-old agency, or organization rather. It started in Milwaukee, and in 2012, YWCA Racine closed. And we looked at the different programming that was offered in the Racine location, and there were some great services that were being provided. So YWCA Greater Milwaukee expanded its service area and to continue those programs that were offered in Racine, and we changed our name to YWCA Southeast Wisconsin.
Okay. And so do you have a physical location in Racine anymore, or are you kind of where are you working?
Yeah, we have a physical location in the mall for the Dress for Success program. And we also offer programming out of RUSD's rail campus and the Racine County Workforce building.
Oh, okay. I think a lot of people, when they think of the Y, they think of the YMCA, which is often associated with recreation and whatever. So can you tell me anything about sort of how the YWCA is different in both its history and its current form?
Marie, do you want to talk a little bit about that?
I told you I was going to just throw some questions at you.
So the YWCA of Southeast Wisconsin serves more in a mission of eliminating racism, empowering women, and promoting racial justice in the community. Looking for freedom and dignity for all. So we're more focused on the community aspect and the advocacy for the participants that we serve. The YWCA 509 program in Racine started in 2017. So that education component is a part of our economic empowerment piece.
Okay, so it's, in your case, you're functioning as a way of serving the community and helping individuals as well as the community. Okay.
Correct.
So thank you very much. That's great. So tell us about your work with the high school equivalency program. What is it? Who is it for?
Okay. Jake, did you want to start with how you came up with the 509? And then I could talk a little bit more about what I do.
Yeah, so in 2014, the GED test changed and became considerably more difficult, and it's based on the Common Core state standards. And I don't want to get too much into that, but the YWCA in Milwaukee has a GED testing center where we went from 409 graduates per year on average to the first year the new GED test came out, we had nine.
Oh my goodness.
We did some deep digging and really broke down each one of these levels to make sure people were making academic improvements, and it was working, but it didn't necessarily play out in the GED examination. So we needed to look at alternative ways to do service delivery. And in particular, there was a state option called PI 5.09. Not to get too far into it, but it said that you can make a high school level program and submit the application to the Department of Public Instruction. The state superintendent has to review it to deem that it is equal to a high school diploma. And upon approval, you can begin offering classes. So we wrote the HSED program, the 509 program, submitted it in 2015, and we got it up and running. And as Marie stated, in 2017, we expanded the service through a couple opportunities that we can discuss at any point to offer it in Racine as well as Milwaukee.
Okay, so you wrote it yourself. It wasn't like a program that you found somewhere else and you altered. You actually wrote it yourself?
Yeah, I wrote the program from scratch. I kind of crowdsourced everything together and asked for input from DPI, the Department of Workforce Development. And I wanted to make kind of a best practice program that people could be proud that they're associated with. So we crowdsourced a bunch of information and we decided that we were going to go towards a work readiness model that promoted like applied knowledge instead of it just being like writing poetry. We wanted people to know the skill sets for the modern workforce, which includes, you know, the IKEA model per se, where, you know, that doesn't have any words in it, but they expect you to be able to build stuff. So flow charts, graphics without words. Don't get me wrong, there's still the reading, writing, and arithmetic, but we want it to be applicable to adults, because if adults are placed in a spot where they see the skill set as something they'll want and need in the future, they're more likely to engage in the program, utilize it in the future, and have a better opportunities in the workforce moving forward.
Wow, that is, first of all, I'm just deeply impressed because this is really ambitious. And I'm just trying to imagine like how many different iterations you maybe had to go through to get it approved. Mm-hmm. So well done. I'm curious. So I assume you have some way of measuring how this plays out. So students go through your program. We're going to talk a little bit about more about what it is. But are you able to measure sort of how they perform in the workforce after this kind of preparation?
That is going to be the end ask. Mm-hmm. So when we talk about this in the future and how people can help, so we're burying the lead a little bit here in the radio program. But yes, we were able to pull together through some partnerships that we can talk about as well, that it started to say what are the measurable outcomes for this. And we've found that over 120 people have had access to post-secondary schooling. We have some individual testimonials that we can share later as well about how people had different opportunities to succeed and start businesses after completing the high school diploma.
Wow. Okay. Well, I'm sure also whatever measuring or any kind of implementation anyone has done has been derailed a lot in the last year and a half due to COVID. So it's going to be kind of hard to measure anything until we have sort of stabilized a little bit, I think. I'm so curious. I've got a whole bunch of questions now. So what were you going to say something, Jacob?
One way that we are able to measure the skill set of individuals coming out of the program versus the workforce is we do apply the National Career Readiness Certification made by ACT. They're the people that judge whether or not people are ready for college. And they also have another division that measures people's abilities as it sees against the workforce. So every one of the students that go through the program are given the Work Keys curriculum. So they do this work and then they have to get a certain score in order to take the examination. And once they take the examination, they are able to get a work readiness credential that's nationwide. And 85% of the students that participate in the program not only earn an HSED, but they earn a National Career Readiness Certification that shows that they have the skills needed in the current workforce.
Okay, so it's kind of two things. You're preparing them for the program or with the program that you designed, but one of the measurements that you use is this Work Keys program from ACT.
Correct.
That's right. Okay. So Marie, can you tell us a little bit about the need for this program in Racine County? And kind of who ends up being in it?
So the need in Racine County is a very great need because of the number of students that don't complete their high school trajectory as they are, you know, coming up with that age, coming up to 18 and getting ready to graduate. So the need is very high. Jake is more the percentage in numbers guy. So it looks like, you know, over 15, did you say 1,000, Jake? 15,000
that 15,000 Racine County residents over the age of 25 need a high school diploma.
Right.
And there's 9,000 of them live in the city of Racine alone.
Right.
Oh, so, okay.
Great, like so I the said, need great need.
Yeah. Okay.
You know, but we're very proud of the partnership that we have now with the Racine Unified School District, where we are able to gather some of those students that are the fifth year seniors that may not, you know, finish on time because they're, you know, within the RUSD system between the ages of 18 and a half and over. We can work with them to actually get their high school diploma if they're between 18 and 21, as opposed to the HSED. So we have a great partnership with RUSD that we started in 2019.
Okay. So that's one way is to sort of tackle those really young adults,
mm-hmm.
to make sure that they, before they kind of get out of school mode, that they finish right. their high school degree.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Who else do you work with?
So then the minimum age is 18 and a half, but we service up to no limit age. So whatever person decides that they want to get that high school credential as a part of their own personal goals, they can work with us to reach that goal.
Okay.
One of my favorite students ever was a grandmother who just retired, worked, you know, long hours, really hard physical labor. And she ends up retiring. The day after she retires, she applies for the program, comes in it. She just said that she had this brick in her chest that she wanted to remove. She always knew that this was something she wanted to achieve. And even though it wasn't going to economically impact her, she knew in like her soul that she wanted to do it. So she went through the program, completed it, and then they went on a big RV tour of the country to celebrate it.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that's great. I just need to do a quick reintroduction. You're listening to WGTD HDFM. I'm your host, Karen Sconzert, and this is Education Matters. This discussion of Southeast Wisconsin's YWCA High School Equivalency Program is archived at WGTD.org on the Education Matters page. You are invited to listen again, or you can find our WGTD Education Matters Facebook page and join in a discussion there. So tell us, you said a little bit about this earlier, but what is really the chief difference between the high school equivalency diploma and a GED? And for example, does it matter to employers or, you know, what have you learned about that so far since this is still pretty new?
The main difference between GED and HSED is that the GED is comprised of standardized tests. Mm-hmm. So you take the four standardized tests and the civics exam, and it is all based on the scores of what you can put together in 90 minutes or 2 hours. You know, you get asked everything about math, everything about writing and language arts, and it's how you perform in that period of time. I make a reference to the HSED as kind of like, we're asking, can you cook, right? You know, for the people that enjoy cooking, you can say to them, you know, can you make a grilled cheese? And people can answer yes. But if you ask it in French or German, people that have the ability to do that may not understand that they can, because they don't understand the wording. So our HSED program allows people to show their knowledge over a period of time through a bunch of different ways. And, you know, imagine getting asked everything you know about radio broadcasting, and you have to explain it right now in an hour and a half. And if it's not the right word, and you might not get full score. So our teachers are able to ask them, like, can I explain this differently? And the students can ask, you know, is there a different way I can demonstrate this? So it operates like a regular high school. It shows, you know, you do your work in quizzes and tests and projects. And sometimes you're demonstrated on the board in front of the group. Now, if that's not comfortable for you, I understand it, right? So then there's worksheets, and there's a ton of different ways that we can do this. And it allows for the flexibility for teachers to use that old worksheet, you know, the one from 1996 that they just love, that they keep in their folder. It allows for flexibility for both the teachers and the students.
Mm-hmm. So just to back up this approach, I interviewed last spring a researcher from the University of Chicago who was looking at the predictive nature of ACT scores versus high school grades in college completion. And I know that's a different level of work, but the bottom line is, the grades are much better predicting, because as she describes it, if you were choosing somebody for your football team, you wouldn't just look at how they did in the 100-meter dash. You would look at how they performed over time, day in and day out, in different games and in practices. And mm-hmm. So to me, it sounds like what you're doing, which is very different from a GED, is you're saying, no, we're going to look at your performance in different ways over time. And that totality of performance is what the students are showing you, and that you can tell through this program that employers can count on. Is that part of what it is?
It is.
Okay. That sounds like a much better situation.
One neat thing is that the students build a portfolio of work as they go through the program. And we liken it to kind of like Renaissance painters, right? The first little bit of work that they do might not be the cleanest, right? But as they pick up skills, you'll see that applied throughout the portfolio, and the students have something that they can hold in their hand and show that they've made the improvements. And that also shows us that the teachers are being held accountable for a program. You know, they're not just giving away the diplomas, because they have to prove to us as well through the portfolio of work that we review.
Exactly.
So Marie, tell us a little bit about the portfolio. Is it really literally a big folder, or do they have a digital portfolio, or what is it that students put together?
So prior to COVID, everyone had a personal digital handheld file with all of their work in there from the enrollment process. And then as they go through classes, in each class, they would have a folder that had all of their coursework and stuff in those folders. Since COVID, I, being an old school person, still have folders. Dawn, who's my colleague, also, she's more the techie. So she has more digital folders than I do. But all of the same materials are in those digital folders as they are in those handheld paper folders. And so it, like I said before, it has all of their work in there. We use now Google Classroom, where they upload their documents into that Google Classroom, and they each have a folder there. And so that at any time that we needed to look at their progress, we have access to it.
Okay. So I want to back up a little bit and just try to look at this from maybe the perspective of a future student, or maybe someone who's listening here knows of someone in their family or friend group who might benefit from it. So let's say somebody calls you up, or however they find you, and decides to do this. What if they don't have a laptop, or they have no idea how to use the internet or whatever? What are some of those really basic things you do in intake or or whatever.
So if they don't have the computers, we, because of our partnership with Gateway and also with Digital Bridge, when we went to the online version of doing the program, we were able to get computers with webcams. And if it didn't have a webcam, we were able to provide them with a webcam that they were able to have access to. And then we also did the training that they needed to be able to use those computers, because some of the students did not, you know, they had limited ability to navigate through the computer system. So we also trained our computers and some of our teachers with how to use the platforms that we were using.
So no one should be discouraged and say, well, I can't do this because I don't have a computer or a tablet.
Not at all.
You have a way of, you have a way of providing that. What about internet access?
Wi-Fi hotspots, we're being able to do with that for them as well.
Okay. So for listeners who might not be familiar with that, a hotspot is sort of like a portable router thing that provides people with access to the internet. So I'm trying, the way I picture it is a hotspot on my phone, you know, like I can make my phone into a hotspot and then my computer can use it to access the internet the same way my phone does. But yeah, so that's good to know. So let's say somebody did get in touch with you. First of all, what is the best way if somebody listening right now thinks that they know someone or they themselves really feel like, oh yes, you know, it's my turn. I need to finish up and get a high school equivalency.
They can reach me by phone at 414-267-3271, or they can email me at mhargrove@ywcasew.org.
Great.
We are also online on the YWCASEW website. There's they can get through there as well.
Yeah, there's a real basic link that they can go to, ywcasew.org/enroll.
Okay. And I will put this information in the show notes for this show, and also when we advertise it on Facebook, so you'll be able to people who didn't catch all that, maybe they're driving. Right. You can also please do not try to write it down while you're driving. Right. But you can definitely find this online, and you can go to our Facebook page for WGTD Education Matters, and it will be there as well. So then let's say they signed up. Is there any kind of intake thing? Do you talk to them a little bit about the previous schooling experience, or do you just everyone comes in as a blank slate, or how does this work?
So when they, if they use that link that Jake mentioned, they're automatically signing up for an orientation, and that orientation, if they're interested in our, morning classes, they would, select and look at my calendar for my orientations. If they're interested in evening classes, they would select Dawn's name, and her schedule is on there. We both do orientations every week, so we're constantly recruiting, constantly getting back in touch with people who are interested in being a part of the program.
So is there a specific start date, or can people just kind of enter on a rolling basis, or how does that work?
No, we have specific schedules that we go by, and we have a new class starting within every 6 to 8 weeks.
Oh, okay. So it's not a long wait. Let's say you joined, you got your orientation right after a class just started. You only have to wait 6 or 8 weeks. Okay.
Right.
That's mm-hmm. good to know. And then after you've done the orientation, you can sign up and take either morning or evening classes, which I'm sure is really helpful for people who have to work during the day. They can do the evening classes if the only time they have childcare is when the kids are in school, which they may not have been this last year.
Right.
they can go then. What is a typical class like, let's say the first week? How do you hook the students in so that they want to continue on with you? Because that is an issue for any teacher. And mm-hmm. I imagine for students who have not necessarily always had the best prior experiences, you probably have to pay even more attention to that.
Right. Jake, you can answer.
So when designing the program, we thought about like the module, we made it modular based, right? So you kind of get like a coin for each class you complete and you put that in the piggy bank. So I knew right away that if you put somebody in a math class right away, that's a great way to lose them. That's too much information in the first little bit. So we stagger our classes and kind of pod them together. Health and employability initially was the first program that they got into. A little bit of softer subject area, right? You know, we can talk about the goals of everybody, what career path they might go down, and talk about a little bit about self-betterment, right? They're already doing that by going to school, but let's talk about physical health and how that impacts, you know, your desire and your motivation and your ability to move forward. So now that they've came to, you know, between 3 to 4 weeks of classes, then we go into a little bit more harder subject areas. We try to get the math out of the way next. So then that way they're not too far in the program if they would ever need to retake the course. We bundle that with science because those two go together fairly well, right? You know, if you're balancing some equations and stuff like that for science, you're going to need to know the math that goes along with it. Then we kind of do a victory lap. Most of the students that come in will need some remediation in order to get into the math class because we have to have a certain score in a test that won't mean anything to anybody else, right? But there's a little standardized thing that goes into it. And but the reading and social studies is usually a little bit more of an easy subject for the people that are applying for the program. So we get the math and the science out of the way in the middle. And then it's kind of a victory lap where they get to do a little bit more fun work in language arts and social studies. So by putting it in the middle, we allow some time for them to get accustomed to the classroom and the health and employability, do the kind of the harder subjects in the middle, and then have a little bit easier out.
And how long does this take altogether for most people?
16 weeks total, depending on if they go and continue throughout the main trajectory. Sometimes students have things that happen in their families and stuff. And so they may need to, you know, step down for a little bit, but we've always welcome them back in to finish. And they have, you know, within a year to finish that whole group of classes.
And so it doesn't seem so overwhelming because
right.
16 weeks is something that people can kind of see the end of, right? Mm-hmm. Sorry, Jay.
That's an important aspect of what she said is that people don't have to wait to start the program, but life happens. Mm-hmm. If we're working with people that have busy lives or adults, we need to understand that if something comes up, you know, they keep open communication channels with us. We continue to try to enroll them each time they come back. And the historical graduation rate, which I was burying for later in Racine, is 87%. Mm-hmm. But a lot of the people do need to take time off and take a break. So continually having a new enrollment time is really key to the program. Makes it crazy hard to run and to manage and to keep track of everything, yeah. Right? But it's student focused and it's the right thing to do.
So how large are the classes?
Usually between 10 and 20 students is our max. Mm-hmm. We, you know, depending on what location that we're at, how many people we can accommodate at a specific time. With COVID happening as well, we're now being more conscious about when we return to in-person services, making sure that people are still able to be in the room and be socially distanced and safe as well. So even with COVID, when we get to the point where we're doing hybrid teaching, we're going to max our students at, you know, 20, 25, depending on where they are and how they're doing the program.
So I just need to do a little reintroduction break again. You are listening to WGTV HDFM. This is Education Matters, and we are discussing Southeast Wisconsin's YWCA High School Equivalency Program. This will be archived at WGTV.org on the Education Matters page. You're invited to listen again, or you can find our WGTV Education Matters Facebook page and join in a discussion there. So one of the things that just really caught my ear just now is when you're talking about health and employability. So it sounds to me like what you're talking about is sort of soft skills. That's what employers call them, the kinds of sort of human relations and kind of problem solving sorts of skills that are not strictly math. You know, they're like other things. So what are some things that you do either in the structure of the class or the activities that maybe help build some of those soft skills?
Go ahead, Jake.
It's still funny, 18 months into the pandemic, and we still don't know how to cue the other person to go. I would say that my aspect of this from a design point was people need to come almost every day. There's a very limited amount of time that people can miss, and consistency showing up at the time, it's like a running clock. So if you're late for the class, we don't necessarily ask why you're late. We just say that you have this amount of time that you can be absent. We look at it kind of like PTO time, but we call it like class time off. They gain that each time they go through it. So we know that people are vetted, that they're going to show up every day. Now, the rest of it, if you have the right teachers in the place, you have the right coordinators, you have the right management in place, being around people every day, the same people that are clicking their pens and spinning their chairs and doing the stuff, you know, it gets kind of annoying, and it's a pretty normal thing. We work with people when they make mistakes to show them what's inappropriate, you know, in the work setting. And we do kind of, we judge it against what would we be able to do at our job. So the amount of time they get off is literally based on the amount of time I had paid off when I wrote the program. I couldn't give them more time off than I was getting in my job. And we hold people accountable, and we hold our staff accountable to make sure that people are treated with dignity, that we tell them everything that they need to do. And when somebody steps outside of the rules, whether it's staff, students, or teachers, we hold everyone accountable to be good to one another, treat everybody with dignity and respect, and honest dialogue, right? That's what's key, is we don't shy away from it when it's awkward. So we help build those skills as we go, but it's almost self-fulfilling when students interact over a period of time.
Right.
It's organic.
One thing that struck me is that a lot of times, and I'm sure I don't have statistics at my fingertips, but a lot of the people who aren't able to complete high school have some kind of special learning need. And I'm wondering if you have some way of diagnosing or at least assisting with students who maybe have dysgraphia, which is a difficulty with numbers or other kinds of learning needs.
So the whole program is based on the idea of asking it in different ways, right? So there's the program alone is an accommodation. Now, this program isn't for everybody, right? Because there are certain people that can't achieve the difficulty of the program, and that's why there's some entry scores. But when it comes to actual academic disabilities, one of the greatest things of this program is that we partner with Gateway Technical College and Milwaukee Area Technical College. They have services for academic disabilities where we can make referrals to their psychologists and to get the diagnoses that are oftentimes not done or not specified enough at lower levels. So people will come in and they'll say, I have a learning disability. And that's all they'll know. Well, that's not enough to work with. So part of the thing is that we ask students upon enrollment through a personal education plan, do you have identified academic disabilities that we would need to make an accommodation for? But when it's more than what we can handle or more than our expertise is in, we do make referrals to the technical college to get the assistance.
Right. That sounds like a perfect partnership. It's not something that you could provide on your own, but it already exists in those institutions that are part of the community. So that's brilliant. Sounds like the hand of Racine United Way helping you out figuring that out, probably partly.
The United Way was one of our original partners down there, and between them and Gateway, that started the whole process. Mm-hmm. We needed some funding to get the ball rolling, and United Way was the first one to just kind of take a chance on the program in Racine. And since then, we've partnered with the city of Racine's mayor's office. We were featured in that What Works Cities initiative. And RUSD became partners during that process. The county was a very early partner with us, given space when we didn't have space to provide it. And even Higher Expectations has helped us do some data analysis of the program to show the effectiveness of it. So I've never had a group of partners in a community better than I've had in Racine.
Right.
And this is my next question is kind of related to that. You know, when you talked about the first unit being health and employability, so do you help students find some other kinds of supportive services they might need around health or housing or anything like that?
Yes, we have a relationship with FSET. It was FSET, now it's called Equus, I believe. Students who are enrolled with us and are part of the food share program are eligible to sign up for FSET, and then FSET will also be able to provide community services that the students need in education, transportation, in various areas. So we have that partnership as well as all of the other partnerships that we have. And then even when our students are in the careers class, we have different programs that are available in Racine, like the Starts Now program. We have the transition specialist from Gateway Com, and we have we've had Maurice Horton from, what is his program, Jake? Big Step, HTP Big Step. We had those guys come in, and they talk about the programs and the services that they offer to our students as well that may help them during their tenure with us and as they're getting ready to go out into the workforce and colleges.
One thing that we found early on in development is that we are experts at certain things, but we can't do everything. So bringing in the people that already do it in the community, identifying them, getting them integrated into the system. And the Equus was one of the original partners that asked us to come down there. And when we get students and co-enrolled in both of them, there is a lot of services that we can provide, you know, a lot of resource management that we don't need to provide directly. So it saves us on costs. They're doing it already, so it helps them enroll. And they help navigate the stuff that is ultimately the static in our students' head, right? The stuff that they can't leave at the door, the 30% of their brain that has to be running on background just to survive. Mm-hmm. So if we can help eliminate that through community partners, that frees up 30% of the brain to start doing the math and the science that has been difficult in the past.
Mm-hmm. And my tenure with United Way also was a help and benefit to me because I now know a lot of the community services that are available in the Racine area. So even if with the people that we are bringing in don't address the needs that they have, I am able to navigate through some of the other programs and services that are available in the county.
Mm-hmm. Wow. So our listeners really like to hear stories about sort of successes that have happened. But before we close with those great stories about your students' success, what are some things that a community member who's listening to this program could do to help this program specifically, or, you know, maybe the YWCA generally?
So we try to do stuff that's not labor intensive. I appreciate that getting asked because oftentimes that's left out of this stuff is, you know, how do other people help if they like this? Mm-hmm. So one thing we're pushing right now that's absolutely free for people to do is go to our Facebook page and like it and maybe share some stuff that you think is cool in it that, you know, racial and gender equity or educational equity for people. This helps us get the word out. It costs nobody. It's free for us then to get additional advertising that way. And it takes probably 3 minutes to look us up, like us, and then share it.
So is it YWCASEW or how is it?
Yes. It's YWCA Southeast Wisconsin.
Okay, great. Anything else?
I do have one more ask. Mm-hmm. We are entering a new phase of this where we have through the city of Racine in the near future, we're getting somebody in that's going to talk to employers about getting these individual family sustainable wages, the $15 an hour in benefits. So anybody that is an employer out there, please know that we are having somebody to connect with employers right now that work with the students on any of the gap issues that could be perceived or actual. And we have a vetted group of individuals here that have came to school for a semester every single day. They have demonstrated that they do have the skills that's needed in the workforce. And we're willing to work with employers to get these individuals into the employment. But not only that, is that if there are any slight issues that occur, we're here to be the middle person and to help navigate that situation. We know these students can accomplish anything because of what they've done in the program, but what they need is an opportunity.
Great. Yeah, I was going to ask about employers. So if an employer is listening to this, or somebody they know has a small business or whatever, who should they get in contact with? Is it you, Jake, or
Marie? Initially, since Marie's already given out her email to the audience, they can contact her initially, but we'll have updates on that. And if we can, we'll provide you, if you can do updates on your site, we'll provide that when the person's actually established.
And once the Facebook post is up, you're welcome to add things in the comments so people can find them. So, so tell us a little bit, tell us about somebody who is a success story from your program.
So I tried to call this individual today to get the approval, but I'll tell you about an individual that came in our first class and self-admitting, she'll admit to you that she is feisty, right? But just that good energy, and you're just trying to focus the energy into the right spots, and a smile that lights up the room, but it's kind of a little smirk too. She came through the program and she was still developing herself out. She was young, you know, and she didn't have success in traditional schooling, but you could tell that she wanted to do better for herself. She was kind. And we did have, you know, some issues that came up in the classroom, but you know what, she was willing to make improvements and change. And we went through the program. She was academically very gifted. It was the social stuff that she'll self-admit that it was an issue. And she worked on bettering herself the whole time. And by the end of it, she was a star in the class. She was helping people through it. And recently, you know, sometimes when people leave the class, you don't hear much for them because we've done our part, right? So they don't find the necessary need to come back and talk to us about it. We were on the newspaper in Racine, and the
Journal Times.
Thank you. The Journal Times. And all of a sudden someone shares it with us. This student opened up a beauty salon shop. She went on and got a diploma. So she was certified to do hair. She opens it up and it's downtown Racine right now. And it was featured in the Journal Times. I really want to say her name and I really want to plug her business because she's the CEO of this LLC, but I didn't hear back from her. So once again, check for the updates on Facebook because I'd like to give her the credit that she deserves, but I didn't get complete approval to throw her out there like that by name.
Okay. Well, that sounds like a great success story. Marie, do you have one that you want to share?
No, we kind of came up with that one as a specific one together. Uh-huh. But as Jake is talking about the students that succeed in the program, you know, one of the students that I had who had been in the legal system and had gotten out and was really, really gung-ho about getting her degree or her diploma, you know, she came in, you know, really rough, you know, like some of our students do. And she was so anxious about taking the tests because she just didn't think that she would do it, but, you know, to go through the program, see those students graduate, cry through tests, cry sometimes in classes, and then also, you know, finish and then move on to the CNC program that she wanted to be a part of, you know, just being a stellar student, working hard, continuing to focus, even though there sometimes are challenges that along the way, the students that we work with stick with it. And so I'm very proud that the work that we did was able to help her to get to her next step, because I think generally she wanted to, you know, do CNC and electrical stuff. So just knowing that she was already enrolled in the CNC stuff and moving forward towards our goal was great.
When we say that the students are rough, we don't mean it in any way negative. They've had rough stuff happen, right?
They've lived a
lot of life in the time that they've been around.
Yeah.
And this is their, you know, this is the time where they start to unpack some of that stuff and work through it. And it's really beautiful. When we talk about success, it's not always measured by the jobs that they get or the amount of college that they go to. Their height changes.
Right.
Literally, people stand taller when they leave.
Well, I am amazed. I've learned so much. I hope our listeners feel like they've learned a lot. I want to thank our guest, Jake Gerges, YWCA Southeast Wisconsin's Adult Education Director, and Marie Hargrove, who is the Education Outreach Coordinator for the High School Equivalency Diploma Program. Thank you so much for listening.
This is WGTD HD, Kenosha.